Hey, what is up, everyone? Welcome to the Crack House Chronicles. I am Donnie, your host, and with me, as always, is a man who knows when he's dressed up, he has his pants tucked into his shirt. It's Dale.
What's happening, man?
How you, bud?
I'm good. I'm all tucked in and looking good.
All right.
Formal, I reckon.
that's your formal wear right there.
Yeah.
Hey, you got any shout outs for us this week, dude?
We got a few. How about this? Well, shout out to our old buddy Jeremy Navy and Shelby. We appreciate you being one of our best friends and a good fan, friend of the show, always wearing a sticker and supporting us. And good shout out to Tam McDowell out in Missouri. She just found us the other day and gave us a little holler, and so I'll give her a shout out. And we want to give a big thanks out to Kelly from Carolina Crime Podcast for the awesome review she gave us. You guys, please check out her podcast because it's really good. And thanks so much, Kelly. We appreciate the support.
Absolutely. All right. Is that all the housekeeping we got, or we got anything else we want to talk about?
Well, we could always holler out through our merch and stuff. So, we got a few T-shirts and stuff online. Go out and check us out. Go to our website and look up under the merch or the store. And we've got a few T-shirt designs, coffee cups, that kind of mess. And see what you like. If you like something, pick it up. Help us out.
And we've got some more designs we're coming out with that we're going to try to get on there for our fans to have. And just remind them, check us out and give us a review. Whatever platform you listen to, click that 5-star button. It does help.
It does.
All right. Dale, we're going to get into this week's episode.
All righty.
And this is the murder of Faith Hedgepeth. And we've been on the fence about this episode for a while, wanting to do it back and forth, whether we were going to do it, whether we were not going to do it. And it's a troubling case, and we talked about it, and I know it bothered you a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just the whole case in itself is kind of disturbing. And it hadn't been solved, so we're going to get into it, and maybe somebody knows something about her.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody knows something.
All right, like we said, this is Faith Hedgepeth, and she was born on September the 26th, 1992. And Dale, she was a member of the Halawa Saponi Native Tribe, which is recognized by the state of North Carolina as an Indian tribe. And this is in Warren County, and it's part of the tribe's traditional territory. Now, when Faith was young, less than a year old, her parents divorced. Mm. Yeah. And she was raised by her mother with the help of an older sister there in Warrington. And Connie Hedgepeth, who was Faith's mother, named her daughter Faith because, she believed that's what she was going to need. Because she had other children. She had two sons and a daughter with a husband with a drug problem. So she was going...
She had her hands full.
Yeah. She needed help. Everything I've read and heard on her, Faith was really a blessing. Just a very outgoing child, wasn't a problem child or anything like that. Even in high school, Faith was an honor student, a cheerleader, and belonged to many clubs and organizations. And she did pretty well academically.
Right.
And Dale, she even earned the Gates Millennium Scholarship. This is a scholarship that is put out, for higher education programs, and it's available to high-achieving ethnic minority students in the United States. And it's funded by the Microsoft founder, Bill Gates, him and his wife, Bill and Melinda Gates.
So it's pretty good. Pretty good scholarship.
Yeah, and this even paid for her college and graduate school. Mm-hmm. So she was rock solid through graduate school.
Right.
To have it paid for. So this was a big deal. Faith was going to be the first one of her family to go to college or even graduate college. Her father attended UNC Chapel Hill, but he dropped out. And Faith, it was her dream to go to Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Even as a young child, that's where she wanted to go.
Yeah, I think one of her teachers also went to Chapel Hill, and I think they had a connection with that as well.
Yeah, and she was even considering either be a pediatrician or a teacher.
Right.
I think those were her two goals. She hadn't decided yet. And her first 2 years at Chapel Hill went pretty good for her. And she took the spring 2012 semester off. I don't know why she did that. I know she was working two jobs.
Right.
I don't know if she needed money or, even though you got your school paid for, that money goes just towards school.
Right.
So
still have to have a place to live and eating, that kind of stuff.
Yes, yeah, you have to live. That's right. But even though she took the semester off, she remained in Chapel Hill over the summer, and she was living in an off-campus apartment, and it was called the Hawthorne at the View Complex. And Dale, this is between Chapel Hill and Durham, and it's pretty much on the county line, I think, between Durham and Orange County, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And she planned to move into another apartment after her financial aid for the fall semester was made available to her. And she shared this apartment with a good friend of hers that she had been friends with since her freshman year, and her name was Karina Rosario. And Karina's boyfriend, his name was Eric Tekoi Jones. And so we're going to hear a lot more about these guys just a little bit later on.
Right.
Now, Dale, the relationship between Jones and Rosario had gotten violent.
Yeah.
Pretty violent. Even to the point she ended it and he had to move out. And in early July 2012, he even attempted to break into the apartment twice.
Right.
And even one time after Rosario had changed the locks.
Yeah, he'd even come in, kicked the door down, and pushed her down to the ground over a tub or something, broke it in pieces. And I think that's when they went to go see if they'd get something done about it.
Yeah, and Faith eventually took Rosario to get a restraining order against him, to get him to stay away from the apartment.
Right.
And Jones reportedly resented Faith's influence over his girlfriend.
I'm sure he's going to be mad about that.
Yeah, like she was telling her, she don't need to be around him. And
it's not good for you, basically.
Yeah, he was bad for her. And at one point, he even reportedly threatened Faith during a phone call even to kill her if he could not get back with Karina.
Right. Yeah. So, sure, that was emotional rage, just pissed off because he kind of blocked him from his girlfriend. So he's, but I don't know.
Yep. All right, Dale. We're going to jump ahead a little bit to September the 6th, 2012. And this was a Thursday. And about 5:45 p.m., Faith attended a Rush event for the campus chapter of Alpha Pi Omega. And this was a Native American sorority that she was hoping to join. And about 7:15 that evening, she left, saying that she had to work on a paper. She was writing about the history of her tribe. Her and Karina Rosario went to the university's library, which is Davis Library, to study together at about 8 p.m. And sometime between 8:30 and 9, she exchanged texts with her father about her hopes of joining the sorority. Now, Faith left Rosario there briefly and returned about 11:30, which they returned to their apartment, arriving around midnight. A half hour later, they left, heading to a nightclub called The Thrill. Now, this nightclub is now closed.
Yeah.
But that's where they were going. And it was in downtown Chapel Hill. And they admitted customers under the legal drinking age of 21 to dance.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of these clubs around, but this was one of them that would allow them to do that. And the two women arrived at The Thrill about 12:40 a.m. Almost an hour and a half of dancing, Karina Rosario told police later that she was having an upset stomach and wanted to leave. And security cameras at the club show her and Faith leaving around 2:06 that morning. And I think this was the last visual record of Faith, of her presence anywhere before she was killed.
There's footage of them going into the club and then footage of them coming out, and that's about all we get.
But looking at the club video, them going in and out, it doesn't look like anyone is mad or upset or anything like that.
No, actually, I was talking to the bouncer on the way in. He opens the door for them, lets them in and stuff. And then when they came out, they just stand there talking for a minute before they leave.
Yeah.
Him and a couple of guys, I believe it was. Nothing looked like out of the ordinary to me.
Yeah. It looked like, it was typical evening or early morning. Now, Dale, by 3 a.m., Faith and Karina had returned to their apartment. And a woman who lived below the two of them was awake watching television, and she heard three thumping noises, which she described as like a heavy bag being dropped or furniture being moved. And shortly after that, Faith's Facebook page was also accessed around that time. Now, at about 3:40 a.m., a text message was sent from Faith's phone to a guy named Brandon Edwards. Now, Brandon, he was a former boyfriend of hers.
Of Corinne's?
Of Faith's.
Oh, Faith's.
Yeah. And he was saying, the text message said, "Hey, B." And we're going to put pictures of this online on our social media, but the text message said, "Hey, B," like a lowercase b, "can you come over here, please? Rosario needs you more. Aha. You know. Please let her know you care."
Oh.
Now, just a few minutes later, another text was sent from Faith's phone to Edwards with one single word, and it was the word "than." And some people believe this was a correction.
Yeah, looks like she just left that out the first one or
something. I mean, I do that sometimes. Yeah. Autocorrect changes something, and you have to send a different word. I mean, I texted you today with something, and it left a word out.
Right.
And I had to go back and add the word in. So, yeah, I mean, I think it happens to a lot of people. And a lot of people believe that word is for the word "aha" that was in the text. And this was the last evidence of any activity on her phone. Now, at about 4:16 a.m., Brandon Edwards sent a text, returning text, asking who had sent the previous text.
Hmm.
Now, Karina's phone record shows that she was trying to call Edwards at around that time, and he didn't answer. And when he did not answer, she tried to call a guy named Jordan McCrary. Now, Jordan was a UNC Chapel Hill soccer player that she'd known at the time. And at 4:25, she left the apartment to go get in McCrary's car. Yeah.
So how do we know these times are exact? Or do we know how? Is this just
probably with the
their,
phone,
their account?
The phone pings, I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably what they've done. They checked that. So that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
Now, Rosario said later she believed Faith was asleep in her room and left the apartment door unlocked. Why would you leave someone asleep with the apartment door unlocked?
At 4:30 in the morning.
Yes.
I don't know. That's one of the things that bothers me about this. And I did hear one thing where it said that maybe they only had one key and they did that sometimes. But you wouldn't do it at 4:30 in the morning. You know where the other girl was in the bed. I mean, maybe if you were running to the store and I knew you was going to be home in 30 minutes or an hour, but right before I got back, then maybe I would do that. But in the middle of the night, that ain't happening.
No.
Because she knew she was going to be there when she came back the next day because she called her to have her come pick her up. I mean, I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself, but I don't know. That part really bothers me.
I mean, even if you only had one key, hide the key. Have a hiding place. That's better than leaving a door unlocked.
Hell, take it with you. I mean, if I'm home, I don't need the key.
Yeah. Lock the door. That's baffled me too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it.
Now, Jordan McCrary drove Karina Rosario to the home of another acquaintance on West Longview Street there in Chapel Hill. And she put the time of her arrival there at around 4:30 a.m. And after spending the rest of the night in the early morning there, a short time later, it was about 10:30, she tried to arrange a ride back to her apartment there at the Hawthorne at the View. And after attempting to reach Faith, and she didn't answer. So Karina called another friend named Marisol Rangel, who came and took her to her apartment. And this is one thing that baffles me too, both of them being back at the apartment, which we're going to get into.
Right.
When they arrived there, it was just shortly before 11 a.m. They entered the apartment and called for Faith, and she didn't respond. Now, Dale, in her bedroom, they found the bloody bodied, wrapped in a quilt, partially nude, and they dialed 911 to call the police. And we've got that 911 call right here.
11:01 a.m. 44 seconds, September 7, 2012.
Dara 911, where is your emergency?
I just walked into my apartment and my friend just like, he's unconscious.
Okay. What's your address, ma'am?
I live at Hawthorne Baptist View.
Give me the address.
I just moved here. I'm about to get it. Oh my God. It's 5639 Old Chapel Hill Road in Durham.
Okay, repeat it to me so I make sure I've got it correct.
Okay. 5639 Old Chapel Hill Road. It's apartment 1602.
1602?
Yes.
Okay. What's the phone number you're calling from?
201-321-8075.
Okay, you say your friend is unconscious?
He's unconscious. I just walked in the apartment and there looks like there's blood everywhere.
Okay, listen to me. Somebody's already sending the ambulance. Okay, I need to get some information from you, and I'm gonna tell you how to help her. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. How old is she?
She's 19.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't want to touch her, but
listen to me. Is she breathing?
I don't know.
You need to check and see. Is she breathing?
Paint. I don't think so.
Okay, listen to me.
There's blood everywhere.
There's what?
There's blood everywhere.
Okay.
I don't know what happened.
Okay, is she on her back or is she on her, laying on her stomach?
She's on her back, but, like, I think she fell off the bed because she's, like, off the bed. There's blood all over the pillows, like, in the comforter. I just don't know what happened.
Okay. All right, listen to me, all right?
Is someone coming?
Yes, I've got somebody coming. I need for you to help her. I need for you to go up to her. We need to see if she's breathing or not. Okay?
I don't think so.
Okay. Listen to me. Go up. The paramedics are on their way. I want you to stay on the line. I'm going to tell you what to do next, all right? Are you right by her now?
Yes.
Okay. Listen carefully. She's not moving. Okay.
No.
Will you touch her arm? Tell me, how does she feel?
She's not moving.
Okay, ma'am. We need to find out if we can help her or not. You've got to, do as I'm asking so we can help her. All right?
Okay.
If you can, lay her flat on her back. Remove any pillows.
Lay her flat on her back?
Flat on her back. Remove any pillows.
Okay.
Kneel next to her. Look in her mouth for food or vomit.
Blood everywhere.
Okay, kneel next to her and look in her mouth for food or vomit. Tell me something. Listen to me. What is your name?
Karina. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
It's okay, honey. Listen to me. Okay, all right. Listen to me. When you touched her, how did she feel? Does she feel warm?
No, she feels cold.
She feels cold? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Don't touch anything else, okay? Don't touch anything else. Okay. They're on their way. I've got police on the way to you, and I've got medics on the way. Okay.
I can't believe this.
Okay. What room is she in?
She's in my bedroom.
Okay. I want you to go back into the living room, okay?
I don't know what's going on.
Listen to me.
In my room that, like, was not here before.
Okay, listen
like
to
someone
me.
Someone that came in here.
Okay.
It really does.
All right, what did
like
you say your name was again?
In here. Because
okay,
I don't understand.
Okay, listen to me. Don't touch anything else in the room.
I want you
to leave that room, go into the living room. You need to make sure the door is unlocked so somebody can get in, so that the medics and the police can get in when they get there. Okay?
Yes, it's unlocked.
Okay, now
tell me
again.
Get here, though.
Okay, they're on their way, honey. They're coming as fast as they can. You just stay on the phone with me, all right?
I am.
Okay, tell me again what your name is.
It looks like someone has been in there because she's not like the cell. I don't know
what
she's
I've let them know. We've got everybody on the way to help you. Now, tell me again what your name is.
What?
What is your name?
Karina Rosario.
Karina?
Yes.
Okay, Karina. You just you sit down on the couch and don't touch anything, okay? You just sit down.
I'm not touching anything.
Okay. Okay. I just want you to sit down because the police and the medics are going to be there. Just they're coming just as fast as they can, all right?
Okay.
You just stay on the phone with me.
Okay.
You just stay on the phone with me.
Are you sure there's something?
Yes, ma'am. They are on their way.
I just can't believe this. No, someone had to have been in there.
Okay. We've got first responders on the way. There's a fire truck coming. There's a medic coming, and the sheriff's department's on the way to you.
Okay.
You just stay on the phone with me until somebody gets there with you. All right?
Okay.
Okay, Karina. How old are you, Karina?
I'm 20.
You're 20? Okay, hon. You're doing all right. You're doing all right. You just stay on the phone with me.
I see the police.
You see the police?
Yes.
Okay. You let me know when they get in there with you, and then you can talk to them, all
okay.
right? I just don't want you to be alone right now.
Okay.
Okay. You just stay on the phone with me.
Okay.
Are they in there with you? Are they coming in?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, honey. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
We're going to talk about the 911 call, Dale.
Okay.
Now, the News and Observer reporter named Tom Gasparoli, he covered this case extensively. He's even got a podcast on this. It's like maybe a 10-part series on this.
It is excellent.
It is extant, and it is very detailed. It is more detailed than we're going to get into on this case.
Yeah, we don't have that kind of time, but definitely go check it out. If you're interested in this after we get done a little more, definitely check his out. It's very informative.
And he also devoted most of his own blog to pondering this case and keeping the case alive. So kudos to him for doing this. And he even raised a lot of questions on Rosario.
Yeah.
On the girl who made the 911 call. And he even said to me, the whole call smells fishy. His quote was, the whole call reeks of unusual.
Yeah, and I guess if you're used to checking that stuff out, or you know, or if you listen to tons of them, you could probably pick out details quicker than if you don't hear them very often. To me, it's not really that unusual. There's a few things here and there, but as far as the whole thing, like they pick it apart, is way different than I would listen to it myself, because I really think, how would I react if I walk in and seen what she saw?
Yeah, and I don't know how I would make a 911 call if I walked in on it. I don't know how I'd do that. My manner would be my whole demeanor.
Right, because this ain't like she just walked in and the girl ain't breathing. This is major damage.
Yeah.
I mean, major damage.
Yeah, she was torn up pretty bad. And even Gasparoli raised the possibility that Rosario's friend, Marisol Rangel, whose voice sounds to him to be like the caller.
And I agree, because I heard her on another it's like a news story that we found, and we'll try to link that up to you so you can check that out. But to me, when they talk to her on there, her voice sounds very similar to me.
Yeah.
As the 911 caller. And even on the 911 tape, as you heard, it takes several times when she asks her what her name is before she ever gives her name. It's like she's kind of dodging that question.
You know, I don't know how I would react if somebody, they were asking my name and how upset I would be. But but she went several times being asked of who is this,
right?
What's your name? And the caller does not mention face name in the call
at all.
That lasts nearly 8 minutes. Face name not even mentioned at all. Only describing the body that she's come upon as her friend.
Right.
So that's, yeah. And even Gasparilli asked, does the caller seem reluctant to touch face body?
Well, yeah, and that's here or there. And I understand they're thinking, well, it's your friend. You want to do all you can to help her out. But when you come in and she's, when she's been beat to death with a liquor bottle, it's not going to be a pretty sight. No, sorry, I didn't want to go into all that. But
yeah, she was bludgeoned over the head several times with a rum bottle.
Yeah.
And this bottle was found at the site, and the bottle had even been tested, and didn't break at all. Mm-hmm. One just like it didn't crack or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. She had been sexually assaulted and beat to death, blunt force trauma. So
yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Now, among the evidence collected was a note near face body with the text that said, "I'm not stupid, bitch, jealous."
And when I heard that on his podcast, I'm picturing in my head, well, I was like, well, that's pretty weird. And then you actually see it. We'll post a picture of it. It's like somebody has torn a piece of a fast food bag, like a white bag, and it's all crumpled up, and it's written really strangely. Like, they even say it's like somebody's trying to disguise their handwriting. And it's three lines. You know, like it says, "I'm not stupid." And then underneath that, it says, "bitch." And then underneath that, it says, "jealous." Correct?
Correct.
Yeah, and so it's really a strange note, and the fact that it has no blood on it whatsoever when pretty much everything else in the room does. It's a strange piece of evidence.
And even the police even go so far as to say they believe the bag may have come from a restaurant called Time Out, which was a popular 24-hour restaurant there in Chapel Hill.
Okay.
So the only place that had been open at that hour.
So I wonder if the rest of the bag was in there somewhere. Has that ever been
seen? This never been brought up.
But this is a weird looking piece. It's like somebody had a wadded up piece of paper and wrote on it. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, they tore it off, and it was written in ballpoint pen.
Yeah. So it could have come from anywhere. It could have come from out of the trash can for all we know. But
that's true.
And at first I thought maybe it could have been written at any time and just thrown in there. But if it was on the bed, it's kind of purposely put, I would think.
And even investigators have said whether or not they've had the handwriting analyzed.
Yeah, and a lot of people think it sounds more like something that a lady would say instead of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's true. And the website Crime Watch Daily had an expert named Peggy Walla and took photos of the note, and she noted that it was clean of blood.
Mm-hmm.
Had no blood on it whatsoever, even though there was blood all over the bed, the comforter, the liquor bottle. There was no blood on this note.
Well, you saw Dexter. You know what happens when
exactly.
I mean, it goes everywhere.
Yeah, splatter goes everywhere. And this is suggesting that it was written away from the crime scene or beforehand and placed there.
Right. So I don't know. That's just a fishy piece of evidence, I think.
And even Walla believes that the writer was, you know, even maybe used a non-dominant hand to write the note.
Right.
And even like a homicidal rage, like by being called stupid or something. And the word stupid even especially looks to Gasparilli like it might have been written separately under the words, as if it had been written more clearly off to the side.
Right. It's just a strange looking beast.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like Dale said, we're going to post pictures on all this on our social media accounts. Now, Dale, details of the investigation were not discussed publicly at first, and a deviation from the Chapel Hills police usual practice, the town obtained a court order sealing all records on this case. Police collected semen from the scene and used it to develop a DNA profile.
Right.
And there was semen found on Karina's body and in other places of the apartment.
Right. And a rape kit from what I've heard.
Yes. So she had been reported that she had been raped. And the autopsy determined that Faith had died from blunt force trauma to the head, which is likely like we said, being hit by the empty rum bottle.
Not just once. It yeah. was bad.
At the very beginning, Eric Decoy Jones seemed to be a very strong suspect.
Well, of course. He threatened yeah. the killer.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And police even learned of his history of domestic violence and the threat against Faith. They also found that the night before, around 6 p.m., he had texted an acquaintance asking for forgiveness for what I am about to do.
So, yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah. And then posted the same message on his Twitter feed. Mm. Now, 3 days later, he changed the banner on his Facebook page to read, "Dear Lord, forgive me for all my sins and the sins I may commit today.
Protect me from the girls who don't deserve me and the ones who wish me dead today."
Yeah.
That's, what the hell?
That is creepy. Now, police sought a DNA sample from Jones, who they, like I said, considered a person of interest. After some initial resistance, he even complied. His DNA did not match the sample from the apartment, and they excluded him as a suspect. Now, DNA from Edwards and many other men whom police had found at the Thrill during that time
right.
also tested with the same result, no match at all. Now, just days, the university's Board of Trustees and the local Crime Stoppers chapter and the Halawa Saponi tribe and the apartment complex had offered a combined $29,000 in reward money for information leading to an arrest. Police hoped the reward money would lead to a quick resolution of the case, and it hadn't turned up anything. And even in 2008, the murder of Eve Carson, who at the time at Chapel Hill was an undergrad student, you know, her body, there was a $25,000 reward that led to the killer's arrest. And even
2 months later, the officer yeah. of Governor Bev Perdue added another $10,000 to the reward for Hitchpeth's killer.
Yeah. You know, still today, there's nothing.
It's just crazy to me that they was pretty thorough, I guess. They must have pretty much, I mean, that's a lot of people to check, and they don't have nothing. And it just blows my mind.
Yep. Now, the following month, Chelsea Delaney, who was a reporter, had originally covered the case in the newspaper The Tar Heel, wrote an article taking a skeptical look at the sealing of the case. And she speculated that seals reveal purpose was to conceal early missteps used by the Chapel Hill police, who might not have been, done enough to handle the investigation. And even the town's court filing, she noted, revealed that the first 2 months of the investigation, no new search warrants had been sought. And she even was quoted to say, "We have to ask, how hot is it? Ask one of the lawyers representing the media." And Delaney talked to the residents of the apartment at the Hawthorne at the View, and they told her that during the preceding summer, they strongly suspected the domestic violence later reported by Rosario and Jones. And they thought the police presence on the day of the body was found was related to that until they learned otherwise. Hmm. That's even the neighbors even suspecting that.
Right.
So it looks kind of fishy to me.
Yeah. This is the same neighbor who said after the police had left when they saw her, Rosario just coming down the steps, texting, didn't seem upset too much at mm-hmm. all.
Yep. Yeah. Now, some more evidence that came to light later on, Dale. A friend of Faith's shared with police a long conversation, perhaps inadvertently recorded, when Faith's phone pocket dialed them on the night before the murder. And they thought this might have some bearing on the case. And it consisted of a three-way conversation, 3 minutes long, between what sounds like to be Faith and a male and female, with music in the background. And it was time-stamped 1:23 a.m. when the night timeline that Faith was at the Thrill.
Yeah, I think it was two guys. Two guys, Faith and another female.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And I think I've read, too, where at some point they thought that the timestamp had gotten off by the cell company.
Yeah, she said that the phone that she had sometimes don't. Well, I guess she didn't say it. But they said that sometimes the phone, the model that Faith had, that was a common occurrence, that some had happened where it would the timestamp on voicemails and stuff would be incorrect.
Yeah.
But it wasn't proven, but it had happened before.
Mm-hmm. And this call was mostly inaudible, and I listened to it, and I couldn't make out anything on it.
No. If you've ever had one, and most people who's got a phone has had one sometime or another where somebody's called you and didn't mean to, and maybe stuck their phone back in their back pocket, and you're listening to it, and it's just a lot of squelch sounding, squealing and squabbles and muffles and womp, 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 womp and stuff like that. Like it's similar. Yeah, Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown's teacher. Yeah, we're on the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Womp, womp,
but it's similar to that. And maybe if we find that, we'll post it. I don't know if we can find a whole copy of it, but we definitely can put up the translation or what the guy thinks he hears in it. But I'm like you, I don't hear a whole lot of anything in it, and it's kind of like ones you get and you go, and what the hell is this? And, you know.
Now Crime Watch Daily hired an audio expert, like Dale said, a guy named Arlo West, and this guy, he specializes,
he's supposed to be the best
in enhancing such recordings, and he claimed he heard Faith crying for help while a male says, "I think she's dying," and a female says, "Do it anyhow." The male and female use the name Eric and Rosie, which is Rosario's nickname.
Right. So it could be. I mean,
yeah.
And this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier is about, you know, they're thinking the timestamp was off. But the cops, I think, were saying, well, the timestamp is what it is, and that's what it is. And so it would be at the time they were in the club, if that was true. But like we said, when we saw them on the video footage leaving the club, it didn't seem like anyone was upset with anyone. And then of all that stuff that was going on, supposedly going on in that recording, you would probably look a little different while you were leaving, or you would just left by yourself or something. There's a whole lot of going on in this conversation that makes me believe that it did not happen in the club.
Yeah.
And there's no like music or glasses or anything you hear. Like if you ever had anybody call you or at the bar, at a bar, much less a dance club, you know you can hear lots going on.
Oh yeah.
And it's hard to hear, and there's none of that in the conversation inside all the squelching and squawking.
Yep. And even Faith's father is convinced that it was recorded his daughter's death, and even Arlo West agrees with that. So that must be tough to hear. The website informed Chapel Hill police of Arlo West's findings, and they agreed to consider West's enhanced version and evaluate it. But due to the time of the message, they did not believe it to be a recording of the killing.
Right, because they still going by the time.
They're going by the timestamp, yeah. And the music in the background further suggests it was recorded at the Thrill.
Yeah, I don't hear no music.
Yeah. But I don't, yeah, we'll try to post an audio link of that. Now, on September the 23rd, 2016, episode of the ABC News program 2020, Chapel Hill Police released an image generated by Parabon Nano Labs. And this is a genetic testing company in Reston, Virginia. And this is they released of what they thought is the suspect who left the semen sample and what he might look like, purely based on the phenotype in his DNA profile. Now, Parabon's president told ABC that Snapshot, that's the program company used to create this image, predicts eye color, hair color, skin color, freckling, face morphology, and ancestry. And the image included a chart listing and the probability that the suspect had the traits he was assigned.
So basically they're saying we can give you a picture of what we think by the DNA code this guy would look like. Are similar to.
And we're going to post a picture of this also.
Right.
And according to the image, the suspect was very strongly Native American and European mixed ancestry, or Latino.
Basically dark-skinned fella.
Yeah. Most of his genetic markers pointed to Mexican, Colombian, and with some South American and Native countries making up the balance. And Parabon believed with over 80% confidence that the suspect would have a skin tone in the olive range.
Right.
With very few freckles and none of...
Or none at all.
Or none at all, and black hair. and it did not make any predictions on his height and weight.
Right, and I've heard a lot of people talking about this, you know, saying this, sometimes this Parabon thing, they look exactly like who you're looking for, and then sometimes they're not even close.
Yeah.
And then basically on, like, if he show you a face, and then if the fella's 300 pounds, it's not going to look the same as if he weighed 125, you know. So it's kind of all we got, basically, is what we're looking at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because after all those other tests and having nothing, at least they got something to put out there, you know, a good start. But so far, it still hasn't helped out.
Yep. All right, Dale, do we want to get into some theories now?
Yeah, I think so. It's just a lot of stuff going on here.
Yeah, and the Chapel Hill police, they haven't named any suspects or even persons of interest in the case. But they have stated they do not believe the killing was a crime of opportunity by a stranger.
I don't believe that either.
And they are strongly believing that it was someone within her group.
I think it's someone who knows her.
Yeah.
Or someone who's with somebody who knows her. Because, I don't know, we've been through talked about a lot of killers and a lot of stuff that's happened to people. And I don't know if it just seems like a crime of rage to me. To take a bottle and beat somebody to death with it, I don't know. this case bothers me, man.
And then rape them, leave them half nude,
yeah,
wrapped up in a comforter,
and then throw a note on top of it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of this. Like I told you before, this case has got a lot of evidence. There's a lot of suspects with nothing whatsoever to go on.
Now, Dale, there's some speculation that's focused on Karina Rosario and, you know, which was her roommate at the time due to her 911 call and the last text sent from Faith's phone. And like you said, you know, that Marisol Rangel sounds
a lot like
that 911 caller.
A lot like her. Yeah, I'm not convinced at all that the text that came from her phone that night that she did it. I don't know. It's just all weird to me. This whole thing weird. I don't know none of these people, and I know this is an open case, and this is all stuff going on, but this little girl deserves some justice. I think, I really think Rosario is in on it somehow or another. I don't know. She just acts weird. She just bailed, left town. They've talked to her a ton, you know, what, 10 times, I think,
mm-hmm.
for many hours. So basically they're not getting what they want from her. Like she's hiding something. I don't know. And this is just all my speculation purely, but I don't buy the fact that this is just some cat that was sitting in the car to sit there and watch them all night and wait for somebody to come out and leave the door unlocked so he could go in and do what he wanted to do. I don't believe that at all.
Mm-hmm. I guess one thing that got me on this case was listening to interviews with Faith's father, Roland. This guy pours his heart and soul into it. And I mean, it's his baby. And
yeah.
I can't even imagine what he's went through, but just listen to him talk about it. It got me.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that got me about this case was him.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what happened. They don't know what happened, but I think there's a lot of people that are involved. I think maybe this Tokoi guy's involved. Maybe he wasn't there, or maybe he didn't do it, or he didn't do part of it, but I don't know, and there's so much I don't know around, you know, and I don't think anybody that they know or in their circle was even close to the photo they came up with that they could say was close to.
Yeah.
Now, she did have a boyfriend that came down that was in her tribe, did come down and hung out some, but I don't think he was that type of person that, you know, that he used to. I think he might have been in love with her and just come to see her or whatever, but...
And I think he was even planning on asking her to marry him, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was one of the speculations. Nobody ever said what she had said to him or whatever, if he did. But I don't know. So somebody just beat this girl to death, and it's just sad.
Yep, it is a sad story. But, you know, like I say, the case is still active, and they're still looking for any leads or anything to help solve it. And, you know, even one little piece of information could break this case. Just one little thing. And if anyone has any information, no matter, you know, if they think it's insignificant, you know, call them. Call the Chapel Hill, Carrboro, UNC Crime Stoppers.
Yep.
And Tell them what you know.
It's just hard to believe that nobody's come forward. I mean, I think somebody knows something. And everything's fishy. The girl's fishy. The Coy Jones guy's fishy. I don't know. And like when they left the club at 2:06, they got back, according to the neighbor, around 3 a.m., so there's an hour just kind of like missing there. So I don't know how far exactly this club was from their place, but it couldn't be too far, I don't think, if they waited to go 12:40 or whenever it was and went.
Yep.
Yeah. Got there almost 1 o'clock, stayed till 2 o'clock, and didn't get home till 3, and then she heard a bunch of stuff going on at 3, moving furniture. So it's, I don't know, it's even possible that everything was done to this little girl before they ever left. And that's why she left the door unlocked, just because she had to have a cover. Why else would you go, oh, yeah, I left the door unlocked? That's just weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there was no sign of forced entry that she had to say it. But
it's like we talked off the air about this. If, you know, if they only had one key, like if you sleep, take the key with you.
Yeah. Don't make sense.
Leave it, lock the door. Or find a common hiding place for a key.
Right.
You know, that's better than leaving a door unlocked. At least you're going to give a burglar time to look for a key.
Yeah, lock it and put it in their car.
Yeah.
Because according to, I mean, they went in Faith's car, so she had a car. She could have gotten her keys, unlocked her car, put the house key in there, put the keys back in the house, and locked the door.
That whole leaving the door unlocked thing.
That's, I don't know, blows my mind.
Yep, it does. All right, Dale, anything, any last words you want to add to this before we get out of here?
No, I just wish that they could solve this case. I hate it. And her dad, that just breaks my heart when I hear those comments from him. And this is his baby girl, and they were pretty close. And I got daughters, so I know how it is. And that's one of the reasons this case is pretty hard for me, because it's just such a violent, violent death. This girl, she was such a promising young lady and was gone. She had so much more to do, and her future was so bright. She was such a smart girl and was going to go back and do great things for her tribe, and all to end like this is just, it's just sad, man.
And
breaks my heart.
Just some last words. That's Tom Gasparoli, who was a reporter. He even wrote that it sounds like to me Karina Rosario has been in the crosshairs as a key figure who knows more than she knows.
I think so. Everything about her is fishy. I don't know. Just them being friends, and I don't know. It's kind of like she said that she didn't feel good at the club. That's why she wanted to go back. But as soon as they get home, she starts calling dudes looking for a hookup. Well, I assume that's what it's for. I mean, why else is she going to come home and start texting guys, you know, at, let's see, at 15 to 4 in the morning.
Unless she's using Faith's phone to just get a cover.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
Plus, it said that she was calling this Brandon fella from her own phone at the same time these texts were going out. So I don't think that Faith was texting this fella. So, like I told you before, she could have done everything. When all this so-called furniture was moving around, all that could be going on right then, and everything could have been done, and this little girl could have been dead before they ever left. Now, they said that time of death was somewhere around 4:30 to
11.
To 11, but I don't know. Can you pinpoint it that close to be, you know, a little bit of an hour?
I don't know how close they can pinpoint that, but, you know, and they may be going off phone pings and things like that when people left and were coming and going when Karina was leaving. But, you know,
it's such a violent death, man.
Yeah. And I just hope it's solved one day.
Yeah, me too. I hope people like us, and we keep talking about it and pushing it out there, maybe somebody will come forward one day. I think somebody knows something.
Me too, bud. All right, we're going to get out of here, Dale.
All right, brother.
We want everyone to be safe, be careful, and always be aware of your surroundings.
Because the next episode could be about you.
This is
The Crack House Chronicles.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Field Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.